Welcome to the lifestyle segment of Conscious Leaders. Leadership isn't just about what happens in the boardroom. It's about curiosity, understanding the way we live our lives. It's about how we take care of ourselves, how we manage our time, and how we create balance in our lives. This is the way we live, and it impacts the way we lead. So let's dive in and discover how we can make conscious lifestyle choices that's not only there to improve our lives, but also to enhance the way we show up as leaders. Earlier this year, Stacey Jane Saggers and Sena Zungu embraced their bravery and launched the Colorful Podcast, a podcast dedicated to tackling deep and challenging conversations surrounding systemic racism and privilege through our personal stories. At the beginning, they were terrified. Conversations about race are steeped in trauma, particularly for people of color, while many white individuals remain unaware of their privilege, often avoiding discussions that confront it. They anticipated backlash and feared being cancelled. But here's what actually happened. Every question, every misunderstanding, and every hurt became an opportunity to spark a dialogue. These weren't just a conversation. They required intention, openness, research, and deeper exploration. Today, I've asked Stacey and Sena to join me to talk about their learnings and delve deeper into the soft underbelly of what is often a very, very complex topic to navigate. Race and privilege. Now, a warm welcome to you both. How are ya?
That energy is one of my favorite things about you.
Oh my gosh, are we ready to listen? I have to tell you, I am entering this room in psychological safety, and I'm very excited that we are able to have this conversation. It is really a conversation that I have to admit is not something that I would usually do, but I feel that it's time that we have these important conversations, because I feel if you can have it in the right setting, have the right conversation around it, I do think that there's power in it, and it is time that we talk about it. But some people have callings for it, and to take those conversations to a next level, which you do. So, Sena, Stacey,
Carmen,
tell me, how are you feeling?
Yeah, feeling... You know what, we're really excited to be having this conversation. It's not an exciting conversation to have, but it's a very necessary conversation. And what we have found to date is that many people will be aware of both racism and privilege, but it's almost like the one topic that we don't go to as a country, which makes absolutely no sense because we are founded upon racism and privilege in this country. Okay. And I mean, Sena and I, we work with big brands in South Africa, and big brands are very aware of the fact that they need to be having conversations about social upliftment, social cohesion, women empowerment, LGBTQ empowerment, all these kinds of things. But the one place we don't want to go as big brand is race, because of, exactly as you said, the fact that people fear being cancelled, fear backlash. But if we don't start having these conversations, how are we ever going to move past?
Yeah.
And not past, we can't move past, but how can we ever move forward together?
Yeah, and I love what you're saying, because it's not like you can put a band-aid over it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of trauma, and a lot of the behaviors that we all, from both sides, from all sides, that we bring to the table is because there's hidden traumas, and we need to get it out to the surface, let it bubble open, that we can actually set the course for the next generation. And I think as I get older, this conversation around the next generation, it's so strange because I never seen myself as being a maternal person. Yeah. And now as I'm getting older, it's like the only thing I talk about. It's the weirdest thing. But anyway, let universe do its thing. So how do you feel about today?
Yeah, Carmen, I like how you, like, it's a little bit, we're thinking, we're forward-looking, right? Mm. And I think as a young person in this country, I think for me, it's just wanting to leave it a little bit better than I found it. And I think a key motivation for me, for Colorful, for having these conversations is because it has been healing for me. You know, having that vulnerability, being able to process things that I couldn't when I was younger. I always say to Stacey, through this podcast and through having these stories, there's so much trauma underlined by everyone. Everyone is entering into the conversation with a different experience, a different perspective, right? And for me to be able to put words to experiences has been a big thing. And I've been able to do that through this podcast, and I'm hoping to equip other people to do that. And I'm absolutely inspired for people to look forward and look at and interrogate this painful part of our history and our presence. and be able to put words to those experiences and move forward, because we want to leave this country better than it is, and we all want to make an impact and have a part to play in the world. I also want to say, you said some people have a calling for it. And while I appreciate that, I think as well, you know, we are not the authority. It's very important. We're not the authority here.
I love that you're saying that.
We are not these people that platform themselves as knowing better around conversations like this. We're simply doing it with an open and honest and using personal stories. And that's the only vehicle in which we know how to enter this conversation. Nothing qualifies us other than a genuine wanting for things to change and that openness.
But you're setting an example. Yeah. And I think that we have to pay attention to that, because if you haven't been setting an example, I probably wouldn't have been able to have this conversation either with you today. So I think that it's important for you also to recognize the work that you are doing, that people are paying attention. So thank you for the work that you're doing in this space. All right. So I've got a little game prepared, because listen, got to have a little bit of fun when we're going to take on such a serious topic. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've got a glove for each one of you, and
I like the color.
Yes,
I know.
Two gloves. I bought these with the intent to become a little boxer. That didn't happen.
How's that working out for you?
No, that's my pandemic. My pandemic dream. It didn't work.
Don't talk about pandemic.
But they look so nice in my house. I love them. When I see them, they just make me feel so girly.
Okay. They're also girly.
And so powerful, unstoppable, right?
Feminine energy. Feminine.
Okay, so let me explain to you how this game is going to work. So I'm going to go through statements, right? And I want you to count in your head. If it's a yes, you have to take your fist up.
Okay.
So it's 1 point. And if it's false, the statement, or it's a no, you have to put your fist down. And that's a minus one. So you have to count up and down. So if the statements are all true to you, then say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 4. Does that make sense?
You know, I did extra maths, eh? And then extra maths upon my extra maths. Yeah. So I'm just,
this is amazing. You know?
Listen, now let's hope I can get my points across. Yeah. Okay, hang on. Okay. Have you ever had to walk to a river to get drinking water? Have you ever had to worry about your family being searched by law enforcement? Have you ever been uncomfortable about a joke or statement related to your race but felt unsafe to confront the situation? Have you ever been stopped or questioned by the police because of your race? Have you ever feared showing affection to your romantic partner in public because of your sexual orientation? Have you ever struggled with mental health issues and been unable to access appropriate health care or support? Have you ever been misgendered or had your gender identity questioned by others? Have you ever felt unsafe or unwelcome in a religious setting due to your sexual orientation or gender identity?
Oh, I feel so passionately about this particular point. No, I haven't. I hate that people have.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Have you ever been closely followed or watched while you're shopping in a store?
Yes.
Have you ever had to worry about being negatively stereotyped or labeled because of your race?
Yeah.
Have you always had access to a good education and a good health care? Right. What's your points?
Minus six.
And yours?
Two.
Okay. How does it make you feel?
Yeah, I think, okay, I like this game because I think it touched on so many different things in which I always try to say we need to be mindful when we enter a conversation about privilege, right?
Mm.
It looks like many different things, and it really highlights what is the definition of privilege. It's just, it's not what is, but it's what you haven't had to face.
Mm.
And we get this a lot from the conversations that we've had. Just understanding that simple terms is that there's barriers which may not be visible to you because you actually have never had to deal with them. And in my own context, there's definitely like something that stuck out to me was access to healthcare. I've never had to worry about that. That in and of itself is a privilege. So I can be a Black woman who's marginalized in terms of my race and my gender. But from access to healthcare perspective, I'm fine. So I yeah, it's about being mindful of all those things. So I really liked that game because it looks different and it is nuanced, but the understanding of that and applying that lens of what is it or what you can't see is important in every conversation we have moving forward.
Stace?
I knew where that was going to end out because obviously I'm a white woman in South Africa. There is no other option than for me to see how incredibly privileged I am. What I have found in us, in our podcast about race and privilege is white people are actually predominantly unaware of how privileged they are. And they tend to tie the notion of privilege with economic prosperity when in actual fact that, well, let's talk intersectionality, but that is, it's a product of racism, the economic situation that black and white people on the whole would find themselves in. And, you know, when I raise this point with any of my black friends, they literally cannot believe me. They sit with the most incredulous face to say, are you serious that you didn't realize that? Like, you've never thought to think about being followed in the store, as you said, or any of those many other points that you made. They've never thought about the fact that they are so privileged and that there are other people who are disadvantaged because their privilege has shielded them from ever having to face that, which is exactly the point for our podcast, is to highlight and spotlight how incredibly traumatic privilege is for people who don't have privilege. And a lot of the conversations that I have had draw on personal stories. I'm looking at you, but it's from many of our guests. Personal stories to highlight for some of my white circles what privilege actually looks like. And when the penny drops, it's amazing, but it's also quite saddening.
Very.
That it would take so much for people who have lived in privilege for so long to not even have realized it.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the things that I've always strongly believe in is, like, when you don't understand something, engage with it. Like, you know, go to the townships, spend a day there, or spend your time, you know, with people that are less privileged than you so that you can understand their stories and their lives. So one of the ladies that work for us, like, she could hardly speak English, and it was really a difficult process. We spend an hour to 5 hours a day where we sit and we say, some days I'll spend like a whole day with an associate, let's cook. I'm going to show you a recipe. I'm going to show you how to make this kind of thing. And I'm going to spend time with you, and we're going to talk about your life and all the things that keeps you up at night and all of that. We're both going through menopause at the same time. So all the knowledge I'm getting, I'm imparting to her. When I get the medicine, she gets the medicine. Yeah. It's like, I'm not saying, it's understanding. I am so privileged that I can actually go to an endocrinologist and I can go and get that medication. But what does she have to fall on? She has nothing. She doesn't have access to anything. And I think when you start looking at it through that lens, you start realizing, and I'm trying to bring stories into play, you start realizing, wow, how privileged you are.
Yeah.
And I think when that starts coming in, like, you have to reflect, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the important part of privilege that people with privilege don't realize is that privilege is founded on power. And it's not, which is why this ridiculous term of reverse racism doesn't stand, is because if you are a black woman and I dislike you because you're black, there's sweet nothing that's going to happen as a result. I just don't like you. There's many people in the world I don't like. Most of them I do like, many I don't. You know, like, whatever. There's no repercussion because in that example, you were a black woman, you didn't have power. I have the power as the white woman. And that is what white people have, and that is why reverse racism is not a real thing. And that is why we need to point out where power benefits and why power is so destructive.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. So I went to go and do a little bit of research, and I actually learned a lot through this. And just trying to understand, you know, how privilege is defined by psychology today, and I really wanted to go to sources and really understand that. And something that was really interesting for me is that privilege is often perceived as being individualized, like it's me as a person. But actually what privilege is, it's structural. We live in a capitalist society where it's about individual gains. So every time when that conversation around privilege happens, we often go to that place, oh, it's about me. Where actually, when you talk about privilege, it's a structural thing that needs to be engaged. And this was also interesting, is the social stratification that happened was in the agricultural here. So these social societies of privilege has been so many years, and it's something that you're born into. So if you, for example, are born in the wealthiest family and you had to give away all of that money, it doesn't matter because you're still privileged, because you've still been raised with a different educational system, different belief systems, and different attitudes. And I think that this is the thing that we really need to always keep in mind, is that privilege is actually so many things and it's got so many structures in it. And when you engage, you're engaging a structure, not the individual.
I couldn't agree more, Carmen. I think just on I always like to have this lens as well when I speak about, because our podcast is about racism and privilege. But even within groups of marginalized people, whether LGBTQ, whether black, whether able-bodied or differently able-bodied, there are subcategories of privilege even within that group.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I am a black, I always like to use my example, I'm a black woman. I'm entering in the space, I'm speaking about privilege, I'm calling these things out, but the fact is I have acquired a vocabulary to be able to do so, and that is indicative of my class privilege.
Mm-hmm.
It would be amiss for me not to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we could all benefit from, just keeping at the back of our minds, right?
Mm.
And how do we, by a refusal to acknowledge that, perpetuate something? And I think it's very important what you said there, is sometimes we personalize it or it becomes an individual thing. And when we do that, I think we get this fear of being labeled as something. And that fear of being labeled as something causes us to sort of go back inward. And I think what we try to do is we all as a society need to get to a point where fear of what we could be perceived, the fear of letting it continue, or perpetuating harms we're not even aware we're perpetuating, needs to outweigh how we're being perceived on an individual level. And that's not to say dismantling of systemic and structural things sits with an individual, but actually it kind of does.
It does.
So if we can just look at it from that lens, I think we could make gains and we could actually move forward.
I love it. And also, I loved your example, right? I mean, this is the reality, is like, we are privilege in all different shapes and forms. And I think it was so powerful when you said, I actually have access to healthcare with somebody. Or what was your answer on the walking to the river?
I've never had to do that.
So, exactly. So, you know, I think that those kind of things is like, and then I also get so annoyed with people and faucets when they open their taps, when there's people walking so far and people that just run water. It's a pet peeve of mine. Yes. Sorry, I just had to put that down. Like, it's such a privileged thing. And when people throw around water, when there's somebody out there that's, you know, has to walk a whole day just to have water to drink and baths maybe, or not, has never bathed before, just like does a Turkish bath once a month or something. Like, it's those kind of things that make you realize, you know, what happens with that privilege? I have the privilege. Am I responsible with that privilege?
And I think that's the point that you were making as well, is when, okay, if you are unaware of it, that is a bit sad, but we all started a journey. That's how our podcast started, was when our first episode was, why would you listen to a white woman talk about race? And it was because that was noting my journey, which was my acknowledgement of privilege, and it took me, I don't want to give away my age.
35
years.
To say your age.
Right? To be able to do that. But now, when you are aware of it, however that does come about, what are you then doing? Which conversations are you having? Where are you actively looking at your social circles and changing things? Where are you being intentional about acknowledging your privilege, acknowledging racism? I'm not a bad person, you know, I'm a nice person. That does not equate to racism. It's not about whether you're a nice person or not. It's about whether you are doing anything to dismantle systemic structures that support racism. Are you using your privilege in the right way, or are you choosing not to? Because everything after the point of realization is a choice in itself.
Yeah.
And it comes off as apathy, and by and large, that is what white South Africans look like, because they're too scared.
Yeah. But I wanna touch on something. So at your launch, you made a statement as to, you know, you felt shame for being white. And, you know, that was very profound, because I went to go and speak to a few of my friends, and also just to understand the dialogue. You know, that word shame really hit home for me, because shame, there's two things. There's guilt and there's shame. Guilt is all about what you do. You feel guilt because for something that you've done. Where shame is feeling that feeling for what you are.
Yeah.
And that's how, and if that for me becomes such an interesting conversation, because no one can achieve anything with shame. And shame, if you look, for example, where, and I'm going to take something completely out of context here, but if you look at cocooning, right, the whole world is hiding themselves. When the world is scary out there, what do we do automatically as human beings? We pull.
Mm.
We go within, and we hide ourselves, and walls go higher, and we do all of these things so that we don't have to confront whatever is in front of us. If we normalize that, world becomes more artificial and more artificial, less authenticity. We're now moving into a time where people don't want to work with people. I'd rather have an AI agent.
Mm.
Yeah.
These kind of things for me is kind of like the same with shame. It's like if you feel a feeling of shame, there's something that needs to be dealt with. And I can honestly say I deal with the same emotion. Mm. And it's that fear, that absolute shame, like of what has happened. I'm Afrikaans, so it's a double whammy that I've actually stopped speaking my language.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a good thing, because it's not my language that did this.
Mm.
But it is the shame, and I think you and I have spoken about this before when I had the interview with Darshni in the beginning. And I think that shame has a way to not just take people out of the conversation, but how do we actually tackle shame? Because if we don't tackle shame, we're never gonna have these conversations, because that is one of the things that is being faced.
I think for me, what stands out to me is how unconstructive it is. And, you know, as you're describing there, there's been instances where you feel like the shame has driven you to not even speak your language. That's your cultural heritage. That's your heritage.
Mm.
You're an Afrikaans woman. And that is so not constructive to me. And it does nothing to change the society that we live in. And so if that is the result of shame, we'd better figure out how to get over it. And I think it starts by being radically honest. And I think that's a huge thing, because you're out here, that's a very vulnerable thing to say, is that I've actually felt shame in instances to the point where I feel that I cannot speak my language. And I think the effect of a racist society on me as well is I felt shame of showing up as my authentic self. The message that I've gotten for society is that there's a certain type of acceptable behaviors.
Yes.
I've had to divorce myself from some aspects of my culture because the message was that it's not good. And
just why colonialism
why
existed.
Colonialism.
Yeah.
So it's not constructive at all if you want to move forward. And I'm glad that we're speaking about it. And I want us to and I think Stacey does a good job of this. When we started it, her and I, the conversations we had at the background, it is that honesty. And I think it's a big part of discharging that shame so that we can get on with it.
Yeah.
Now let's get on with it. Now what? Yeah.
It's such a liberating thing in the end of the day. If you can have the conversation with the right people and you feel that there's psychological safety.
Which there wasn't in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point that we do need to make, is that taking action is not easy.
Mm.
It is, I mean, we were terrified. Terrified. Sweating.
We were so bad. Like,
terrified for that first episode to come out, because how can a white woman join a black woman who has all the valid, all the authority, and I'm not saying you speak for all black women, please don't, that's not what I mean at all, but you have a right to have that conversation, to enter into a conversation about race and to have an opinion because you have been disadvantaged by your race.
Mm.
I don't have any right to have that conversation as someone who hasn't been disadvantaged, unless you consider it from the perspective that I'm coming at it from, which is that I don't know anything and I need to be better. Mm-hmm. But that is also not to say that you need to sit there and tell me about what racism looks like. That's on me. That's my problem. I need to go and research it. I need to go. Mm-hmm. If I don't know enough, my race created racism. If I don't know enough about it, that is me. That's on me. And it's not her job or any other black person's job or any other marginalized group's job to teach me, the privileged person, what that looks like. Mm. And that's where we can dispel shame. The truth is, I'm not convinced it's ever going to go away, for me personally. I can't tell you which one's worse, guilt or shame. I can't tell you which one's worse. But I also feel that if that's all I'm walking away from this deal with as a white woman, I think I've done pretty well.
Yeah. Look, I mean, this is the thing, as we're navigating this life, there's one thing that we need for this age that we're in. It's emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And to navigate that and dealing with our emotions is not always an easy thing. And I think that those emotions are split between all parties. We all are dealing with so much varieties of challenges and to overcome. I think where it hit me very hard, I was watching the show on Netflix. I can't remember if it was 100 Humans or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they do all these experiments and research. And there was one exercise where they brought in people and they had to shoot with a gun. Obviously fake shooting. Mm-hmm. It's not real thing. Not the real McCoy.
Not that kind of movie.
What is that movie called? Squid Game.
Oh, Squid Game.
Oh my God, I would sound like such an old person. Anyway, the show, I think, is 100 Humans. I can't exactly remember. It's been a while. But there's this social experiment that they do. And for the whole week, all of the staff and the crew, they've been mingling with them. They made friends with them. They loved them. They were laughing and having lunch together. And they grew such a strong bond over the weeks with the crew and the staff and people of color. And they put them in the experiment. So you had to only shoot the person that came in front of you while you're shooting your target with a cell phone. And what actually happened was every time when there was a person of color, they would shoot the person with the cell phone, not the gun. And that for me was, some of the people were completely traumatized, but in that survival mode, in that state of how can you put it? The state of anxiety and having to make a quick decision. Mm-hmm. The instant decision went to shooting the black individual.
So did all the black people in this experiment, did all the black people have cell phones and all the
Well, most of them, but there was quite a lot of incidents that were happening, and then they confronted them and they said to them, like, do you realize that the person that you actually shot was the person that you were friends with for 2 weeks, and people were broken. They actually went to go and apologize.
Yeah.
It was such a powerful social experiment for me to see how our biases is something that we need to work on, because even if we think, we can never think that we've got it under control.
Yeah.
You're always going to be in a state, like as Pepe Marie calls it, like I'm a recovering racist.
Yeah.
I'm always working on this. And I think that is something that we all need to recognize. It's not something that just goes away. You continuously have to go and visit your heart and say, like, that thing there.
It happens everywhere. Mm. Phone a call center, and when a person who sounds like a white person answers the call and is there to assist you with your problems versus somebody who doesn't have that language privilege, what judgment is your brain going to automatically? Mm. This is one of the examples that I used with a family member of mine to say against that argument of, but I'm a nice person, I'm nice to all people. So I'm like, I'm not talking about whether or not you're nice to people. I'm talking about, where does your brain go when you're interacting with diverse people? Mm. Diverse in all cases. Mm. Yeah. Where does your brain go? That's the thing we need to work on.
And I like that example of that social experiment, because it's so indicative of what is the effect of unconscious bias. For some people, it can be a matter of literal life and death. You know, it is, I cannot emphasize that. What is our bias? What are the consequences? It looks different for everyone. Important to note, we all have unconscious biases. And actually, I'm going to make a funny example. You know this one.
I know this one.
So Stacey and I were sitting somewhere and we...
This is
on
my
video.
Bestie, by the way. You do know that.
Yes.
Oh, this is my absolute bestie in the entire world.
Best friends in the entire world. Anyway, so we're sitting and we have this on camera, actually. We are recording a video, all chatting, and then music is playing in the background, and
and Stacey starts singing to the music, and it's 90s R&B, and she goes, my goodness, I love 90s R&B, this is my song. And I look at her and go, what do you mean you like 90s R&B? And I start laughing, and she asked me, why is that funny? And immediately I was like, no reason. But even in that moment,
but I'm a white woman, why would I like
exactly yeah. My brain went to, she is a white woman, she knows 90s R&B, that's not a typical, that's not something I would, my biases and my whatever, I don't associate a white woman as enjoying R&B. And it's a very low stakes environment to be wrong, and it unearthed my unconscious bias. I immediately went to try and deny it. So I was like, no reason. But I look at that video and I think exactly when we're confronted with our own biases, it's, we are like, whoa, what does this mean about me? And immediately my first instinct was to deny it. It's on video, it's funny. But that's the consequence of that, right? Yeah. Is that it was a misunderstanding, it was funny, we laugh about it now. The very other side of the coin, if you don't confront that or you're unaware of it, is the consequences are much dire.
Yeah. And also I want to point out there's also conscious bias around racism. Like there's people that consciously are racist.
But you know what? You're never going to change them, right? That crowd, do we honestly care? Just go and live by yourself. Yeah. Do your thing.
Yeah.
You just go do your thing. But for the people who actually want to show up in the world, but don't realize that they're not showing up as hard as they could, let's have that conversation.
Yeah.
But for those idiots...
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I'm... No, but you're never going to change that crowd's mind.
No, Graham, one of our guests actually said, we had a guest, we tackled the topic of white privilege. It was one where, you know, we struggled to find someone to get onto that episode because we knew it needed to come from a white perspective. And he was just, what about people who are actively, racist? And it's very difficult. Nobody's going to... There's very few people who are outwardly racist. And it's refreshing because now we know what to do with you. We just not, you know, what are you going to do with that crowd? The more insidious ones is where you're unaware. And that is also the most difficult type of racism to confront, is because there's so much plausible deniability. You can't really put your finger on it. Is it, isn't it? And then because the fallout is so huge with speaking about these things, then we sweep it under the rug.
Yeah. And this is also the thing around the psychological safety, right? Being, you know, in a place where you feel trust and respect both sides, irrespective of race and type of privilege, because you want to go into the conversation where you can feel liberated. The aim and the intention is always to be liberated, but also not to walk away with a void. And, you know, so many times you can walk away from conversations and you feel that didn't feel good. And that's not what it's supposed to do. And also... In my experience, I have found sometimes it's just better to listen and not actually saying anything, and actually you'll learn a lot more. And especially when I don't feel too safe, the best thing that you can do, and this is just I might be wrong or right, or I don't know, but I mean, I just feel for me it works just to listen and then go and deal with what I've heard and let that sink in and process it.
I'll agree with you. Psychological safety, we've briefly touched on it, but I think as someone as well engaging in a conversation, especially when we started with the two of us, I had to, as a person of color, that is also a legitimate concern of mine, you know, coming on a platform that I know people are going to see, knowing the systemic nature of racism, knowing that not everyone's going to agree with you, most probably a lot of people are going to disagree with you. It is big to come to that. It's a huge process, and I can't overemphasize it enough. A lot of people of color, there are real life consequences with all marginalized group for actually speaking up about the actions and of others that marginalize you and oppress you. It's a difficult point to come to.
She was literally terrified of the impact it would have on her formal employment, because I wasn't, because I can speak up, but for her, she's gonna, sorry, I don't want to talk on your behalf, but
ahead.
I'm just relaying the conversation that we had about being labeled aggressive or overly this or overly emotive, like all these disgusting words that describe people who are who have lived trauma and are now being told you're being too emotional. I mean, how much do we love that as women? How much do we love it when a man wants to tell us we're being emotional? It's so awful that in Senna's case you were concerned.
No, of course.
About the repercussions, but I didn't have to be concerned. So I don't know. I just want to make that point that the fact is repercussions are vastly different depending on which group you come from.
Yeah, I also think when I, you know, from a psychological safety perspective, I also think delivery is very important. Like I feel, I've learned this over the years because I've been always like I'll go into a room and I'll just like a bull in a china shop and say what, you know, I'll be such a professional troublemaker to fight for injustices that I actually ostracize people. Mm. And I think that it's a very thin line. You can still do good being kind.
Yeah.
And speaking kindly about everybody in the process. Because I think for me that is the thing is our men are bleeding.
Mm.
And there's a lot of healing that also needs to happen. I had a very long conversation with an interview that we're going to have shortly. Is also, this was actually in Psychology Today when I read this. And this was quite triggering for me because I have a husband that's a white husband. And he also doesn't know sometimes, and I can't speak on his behalf. But, you know, we have conversations about these. And and one thing that was mentioned here is, I am ashamed of being a man and I'm ashamed of being a white man.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, this shame thing that's happening is, and yes, there is some, the white privilege and the white, there's certain, you say, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but you know what I mean, is that there is certain representatives of the white privilege that are ruling the world and doing their own thing and not making room for anybody.
Mm.
And I think we all despise that. But I think layering it as one thing and saying that generalize, and I think that has been what has been happening quite a lot, is that generalization. And we can't go forward if we have those kind of conversations because it's whether we like it or not, it's disrespectful, and you're never going to get psychological safety and have a person feel safe to enter the room.
I think that's such a valid point. I actually just want to give a point of view on that. So that is a reality. I think there are many white men who are experiencing exactly what you just experienced, shame, actually, which is what I said I experienced too, shame. Now I've just lost the point I wanted to make was, the point is because you're feeling that shame because you have acknowledged your privilege. So at least you're one step closer to awareness breeds intentionality. Yeah. Okay, so you're one step further. But now what are you going to do with that? Mm. So it is a reality. I agree. Your husband and many of the white men that I know, if they are at the point, and by the way, there are many that haven't, and for those men, I really do feel emotional because I'm just like, how can you know, you know, anyway, but that's a different crowd. But for the ones who have acknowledged it, but then what? And our guest on one of our shows said he acknowledges that he's a white man with many privileges. He was referring to the fact that he's a tall white man, so he's got the privilege of height, there's so many privileges that he's aware of them, and so every opportunity that he has in every social circle, every work circle, every cycling on a Sunday with his mates, every opportunity he has, he is speaking on behalf of marginalized groups. And I think that is the only way to move us forward, is to acknowledge that we have an individual responsibility once we have acknowledged that privilege to take it forward. Sitting with the shame, as you rightly said as well, comment, sitting with the shame is going to help no one.
Yeah, 100%.
I want to comment on something you said because I think it's very important for anyone sort of, you know, who feels deeply about tackling any sort of systemic injustices. And I like that you shared, you know, in the past used to be very rah, rah, rah at all costs. I think as I reflect on my own life and my own activism
and
journey.
And she's so old.
Yes!
Oh my God.
I've also grappled with that, and it's something that Stacey and I have grappled with as well in this podcast because, you know, holding room for a dialogue, it looks very, very different to everyone. There's very different schools of thoughts on how this should be handled.
Absolutely.
People, there are those with the school of thought of, this is not going to get us anywhere being nice about it or hearing different perspectives. And I see the merit in their argument and I can respect that. And that is the course that they've chosen. That's the way they're going to tackle it.
Mm.
How it looks like for me is different. And my thought process around it, I look at the net positive and net negative.
Mm.
Because I think that the form that we've decided to take about it, which is underlying our conversations with empathy and understanding with the goal of moving forward is the way that we've chosen to tackle it. We get criticism for being too nice. I'm going to flatly, there have been accusations, or not accusations, but people have pointed out that, okay, the reason you can even hold this dialogue, you are aligned with them, or you are, you know, you're a sellout, you are a coconut, you have no lived experience of what, you haven't experienced the full wrath of racism because you have class privilege. I can't completely, like, disregard that. That's valid. But I think with everybody who is on a journey to try bridge the inequalities that we have, you reach the point where you grapple with this. What is going to make the most impact? Is it the rah, 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 rah? Is it, and I can respect that, and I think there's validity in that approach. For what we've decided to do, that looks different. To us, we are coming from it very vulnerable with empathy and understanding. And we understand that a lot of people don't want to hear that, and that's okay.
Yeah, but I mean, you're not doing it for them. You're doing it for the right reasons. And I think that that's always just to remember the purpose as to why you're doing it and what you want to achieve. And I think, I mean, like with conscious leaders, conscious leaders is a very bold move to put conscious leaders as a name. But it keeps me accountable because every day I have to wake up and I'm like, yeah, you shouldn't have done this this way. You shouldn't have said it this way. Yeah. Maybe you should have asked somebody. Like, and it's a learning process, but I think it's the willingness to actually lean in and willing to learn. Now, one of the other things that I really wanted to also address or actually talk to you about is, like, this is my experience. So I've always called myself the voice of the customer. Like, you know, working in marketing, and that has evolved in so many different ways. And one thing that, you know, I'm sure that you're working in the marketing industry that you can understand is that conversion does not happen if there's a disconnect of language. And it's one of the inconsideration within the buyer's funnel. And you know the language we speak. But I find that to be true for anything. And I feel that corporate society and the jargons and the buzzwords, and if I have to take the word intersectionality and bring it into a day-to-day conversation with an ordinary human being, they're not always going to know what those buzzwords are. And I feel that a lot of people are being lost because we're using the wrong language. And we need to find a more inclusive language in order to have these conversations, because I feel that if you want change, the language has got to change.
Yeah, and I think that's very much what we aim to do. And the only way you're going to do that is by sharing personal stories that highlight what big words are used to describe.
Yeah.
So it is about adding a human lens to a system that was created to dehumanize.
Yeah.
How do we do that? We share stories, and that overcomes.
Yeah, but I'm not making this personal
language
about your podcast.
I know this is
a generic systemic thing that that is becoming so overindulged at the moment, where it's about language. Like, if there was a tech conference the other day on AI, where they said that they actually feel that the technology terminologies that is being used in boardroom level should be, every person in society should be using those words. And I'm like, why? And it's like enforcing that kind of attitude of, here's all these big words, now you have to, everybody in society, if you don't understand that, you're already also not creating inclusion. And I think that that's a challenge that I'm trying to also just understand.
Carmen, I actually couldn't agree more with you, and I think I'm going to look at it from, like, a very personal lens as well, because that's the way in which I relate to it. When we were starting, we were grappling with starting Colorful, I remember thinking, I don't know if I can speak about race and privilege because I haven't acquired a master's level vocabulary about it. And I said, my goodness, the only way I can publicly or I can platform and we go on a platform and speak about this is I need to be well-versed in this. I need to be educated in this. I need to know all of the thought leadership and all of that. And again, exactly what you're saying, it's actually doing the opposite. What are we saying on an everyday level? It's not digestible at all.
Makes
it's
human
not
language.
Human.
Yeah.
It's not human. It takes away the face of what we're trying to achieve, and then it makes it this abstract concept. So I think to a large degree, I agree with you. I think that...
I mean, obviously, you have to read the room. Like, if you're sitting with corporates, you're not going to dumb it down. Yeah. I think it's understanding, just reading the room and having it...
It's making it relatable.
Yeah.
If we can use terms that are relatable, then we collectively will have dialogue to move into that space without making it abstract and theoretical.
But I also think that there's a space and time, like there's a space for each person to bring in their strengths in that. So for example, what I'm talking about, the language, may be very much within the academia realm. If you have that language and that's the way that you can use it and to impact society in that space. I just think that we need to be wary that we need to be a certain kind of, or have certain kind of qualifications or certain kinds of things in order to start just having genuine conversations. That's not to say interspace is ignorant, and that's not to say there isn't room to go back and read. You know, as someone who's very passionate, I'm passionate about inclusion. I think it stems from the fact that I spent a large part of my life feeling like I stick out like a sore thumb. And there's a lot of things that I don't know, and that's okay. But I don't think just because I don't feel necessarily comfortable in that I have all of the vocabulary that I shouldn't engage. And that's what, you know, engage.
Yeah.
That looks different for everyone.
And I think to the audience, I think that that's a very important point, because don't feel that you need to be an expert in order to enter these conversations. Mm. It's just a matter of feeling respected and say, listen, we're going to go there. I mean, like, one of the things that I wanted to also talk about is, you know, psychological safety when you're having a drink or two is maybe not the best time to have these kind of conversations, because you're not going to remember the outcome.
or you're going to go to one of your friend's 40th birthday parties and storm off in a huff because your point didn't come across properly, and then you're going to wake up the next morning and be like, oh, what a mix. So I support that.
So read the room and also just and try and have it with a cup of tea, love.
Yeah.
But you I think that, you know, that all walks of life, because if I just look at Cynthia and I, like when we have to go into these conversations, you know, her view of the world, she's so humble and so kind and so loving. And I'm like, geez, like, I love this woman so much. And I sometimes, you know, just can have conversations with my husband. We talk about her all the time and what we learn from her. And with the love and kindness that she gives, I feel that it's my responsibility also to bring my language down to a way that she can also understand that she's being heard and that she's feeling loved and also feeling understood. You know, because sometimes, you know, I can just see when she looks bewildered and she doesn't really understand what's going on. And I'm like, okay, I've got to take it down. And I wonder sometimes a lot about this and in how we talk to people and when we have these conversations is... Are we dumbing it down enough? And I'm saying this word deliberately, so that because if you're highly educated, you will still understand.
Again, relatability and accessibility, right? We can't speak about we can't speak about these things again in abstract sometimes, and that's why we like to use personal stories as a vehicle to show you what practically all of this looks like. So we can be like, okay, intersectionality, this term means this practically. And I attended an event of yours, and we had an incredible speaker on one of your youth collaborative, and she was practically laying out to us what being queer and black and a woman all at the same time looks like when she walks in for a job interview. I had chills. That was what she did there, was she shared her personal story of walking into a job interview and someone saying, immediately looking at her and saying, I'm going to pray for you.
That was it was awful.
I was like, I didn't expect that.
You have
to listen. We'll put the link below that you can listen to that.
When you asked that question in our game earlier, and you said the thing about being shunned in a church environment, I can't cope with it. It is the opposite of inclusion when we are doing that, and we are creating an exclusive community, and then we're saying God endorses this, and I can't cope with that level. And hearing that story that she shared about, I'm going to pray for you, I think that I felt in that moment when she shared that story, I felt as incredulous as when you said to me that time, really, do white people not see this? Mm. I think I felt the same way. And we just have to try harder. Like, we just have to understand our biases. And we have, individuals can change this, but we have to acknowledge our biases.
Mm, 100%. And, you know, it's a journey, but I think what one word that needs to come in as well is patience. Mm. And having patience with those that are not there yet. My spiritual teacher always says they are not, they have forgotten who they are, and they just need to remember who they are. Just wait for their time to come. And they will come to that realization when it's their time. Mm. And I think that is always so profound for me. And I think also just like dealing with all of these emotions around these topics. You know, in numerology, you can actually see racist in the numbers. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You can actually see a person when they're very racist. You can actually see it in their numbers. Wow. Or it would be a person that then later becomes an activist for racism. So, why I mention that is because, like, I always very cautious around people like that.
Yeah.
They have certain numbers. I'm not going to mention it. But I found it very, very interesting is that there is also certain it's people that are, yeah. I mean, this is not everybody believes in what I'm telling you, but yeah. It's just interesting for me also how things, you know, our stage in nature and how you learn things about everything. I think for me, really, this conversation has been so enlightening. I expected it to be terrifying because, you know, I think ultimately for me is it's not that I don't want to have the conversations. It's like I am happy to have them in private, but it's not something I necessarily want to broadcast. Especially, you know, I'm a white female, and it's also not my space where I always feel comfortable. But I also think that we need to move beyond saying that it's not our space or not our place. And what I'm realizing in this conversation is there is room for these conversations, and it's quite okay, and it's quite liberating. So, yeah, I'm very excited for the work that you are doing. I think in closing, let us just bring this back and just tie it up a little bit. Mm. You know, based on everything that we've discussed, and obviously, although this is being broadcasted to you and you're going to explore and you're going to listen back to this, I want you to remember that this is a safe space that was created between the three of us, which is a conversation that we had heart to heart, and that you too can have these conversations. I think that is what this whole goal is to also demonstrate that we can have honest and authentic and trusted, respected conversations. Could we have some sort of guideline of you when entering these conversations as to how to best approach it?
Yeah. As a white woman entering this conversation, I had to work my way through this quite extensively.
Mm.
And where I've netted out is I literally had to sit and look at every aspect of my life, my social circles, my work circles, spaces where I carry authority, which as a white woman are many, my even simple tasks like going to the grocery store, like I had to look at every aspect of my life and systematically through them question whether the behaviors I display in all of those spaces are inclusive or not. And what I found was that I have not enough black friends. And so I have literally, and Senna and I sometimes, sometimes we laugh about it. Like I'm going to be turning 40 soon, and I'm busy planning my 40th. I live in Cape Town, although I'm here in Joburg very frequently. But if I have my 40th in Cape Town, I'm not going to have any black people there, except Senna, who's coming down to be our. And that's not okay for me. And that is actually why I don't want to have my 40th, is because that's not what I'm all about.
Mm.
And so we need to very consciously say, why do our circles look like this?
Mm.
And then when we see that, we need to actually go and change it. And that is literally what I'm doing, is making new friends so that I'm exposed to new opinions, new people. My children see new people in their lives. You need to be intentional about it. You can't just say, well, this stuff happens to me.
Mm. And I also just want to point out, it is a reverse thing. It's not just a white thing, right? Because I've just done the research study now for conscious leaders, and it did come up in the research study by women of color that it's the reverse as well, where they don't feel that they have white friends. So I do think that we also need to realize that it's something that we all need to work on. Mm. It's not just a specific to race.
I agree with you. I think as human beings, we gravitate to what we know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's the point that Stacey's trying to make, you know, not very much from a... it happens for every single one of us. We will gravitate to the things that feel familiar with us, to us. And when we do that, again, we block ourselves. We start putting ourselves in silos. So I agree with you. It is a being intentional and about diversity.
100%. But that point is so true. It resonates so deep with me. You know, I mentioned this. I worked on the ships, right? 70 nationalities. You get fired. You sleep in bunks. Four, three people, a different race. You used to watch a Below Deck.
Been there.
Yeah. So, you know, you, I mean, I remember, you know, situations happening on the cruise ships that you were like, oh my gosh, you know, I can't believe we're all getting along. Like, it's just so amazing because the cultural richness is so important. And I think that the friendships that you form through that is actually far more enriching.
Oh, so much.
Yeah.
I mean, it blows my mind that you and I may not have been friends 10 years ago because I wasn't aware of how incredibly small my circles were.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is just the saddest. I would have died sad.
Yeah.
Like, there is so much richness in meeting new people, in experiencing circles that look different to your own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We really do rob ourselves. One of our guests said, we rob ourselves of a human experience.
Yeah.
And that looks so rich. So that's not going to happen just by, you know, sitting, be intentional about diversity. Mm. And I'm sure now you're speaking about that ship. It's probably some of the best memories you have.
Well, I want to go back. You know how often I dream about it. I dream. I'm back on the ship.
Exactly.
I'm always excited. Exactly. Like, I mean, it was in my 20s, but I still feel like I go there often. But it was the happiest time of my career life, I think, was working overseas. And you're 8 months together. It was like you are together for a very long time. It was so amazing.
Sometimes I'm a dreamer, but can you imagine that unlocked in a perfect world on a grander scale? Can you just imagine?
Might just take everybody and put them on.
Maybe just everyone, go on the show.
Take them on a journey with a compass and take them where they need to go. Now, closing thoughts for you for guidelines?
It looks different for everyone. And I always like to say this about the podcast. It's just a perspective. It's perspectives. Mm. It looks different for you based on the things that you've experienced. It's so subjective how we enter this conversation, the format we've decided to do it on. I think what personally has worked for me when engaging about race, particularly with white people, and to get that psychological safety, I can sense I really depend on my energy as well. And I know you and I are so big on energies, but for me, approaching it, if someone is asking me a question with an open mind and I can sense a genuineness there, and I'm very primed to it as well, because as someone who's from being a black person who's experienced racism quite extensively, you have a feel for it. So I don't know. But all I can say is I value radical honesty, and I think that's where we took off. I don't know enough about race. I'm scared. How can I pronounce your name? Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce your name.
That is a hard thing for me. But I think also my neurodiversity has a lot to do with it, because I need to watch something to learn it. I learn differently. Yeah. So when I can't see the spelling of a specific name or how it's spelled, I can't articulate it. So I think, you know, it also my name is actually supposed to be Carmen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is it?
Carmen, because it's Spanish.
Okay.
But it said Carmen.
Yeah.
And it's just to make it easier for people around it. But I mean, that's one thing it's so hard for me is names. And I put my hand up, and I'm sorry if I offend anybody. But it's also a thing for me, because I can't see the letters together. I need to literally know, especially if it's not a name I know. I can't see the letters, and it's I literally go in shock.
And so then can you see how, for example, like there's you're explaining that and we are having a discussion about it. In another context, if you butchered someone's name, that
exactly.
is how they grew up, their name being butchered, not because someone couldn't or had a neurodiverse issue, but because they simply could not have been bothered enough because they were black.
Yeah.
And no, that is the context in what we're navigating, unseen dynamics, right? And how do we bridge that if we don't communicate about it openly and honestly? So I don't have a sort of guide, but I think it really starts with a huge amount of self-awareness, ability to just have a little bit of an open mind that your perspective and what you've been told may not necessarily
be the
truth or may not necessarily be the end all and be all. One thing I can say is because of that openness and vulnerability, we have a friendship that is... the most amazing, one of the best and most amazing experiences of life. And we could not have had that. In another context, do you realize it was illegal for us to be this way? Can we just contextualize Not too long ago.
I remember when I was a little girl, I had the lady that worked in our household. I made very good friends with the little girl and I always wanted her around. And I think it was Tandi. And we always used to make tents. I had this thing where I loved to make tents in the garden, and I used to prepare the tent for her. And like it used to be like, oh my gosh, like I want, because I was the out of our siblings, I was actually the only child. My father and my mother's only child, and so for me, growing up kind of like alone, like I always loved that company, and we just got along, and it was just so much fun. And she was just not allowed to come. Because of the after hour things, and you know, it's just like when you think about it, and I wish I could track her down where she was, you know, knew all of the information. It's a sad thing.
It's a sobering thought, and I want to ask you a question since we're rounding up, and you know,
where is she going? I might edit this out. I don't know.
How did you feel prior to entering this conversation? What was your thought process? How did you feel about it? Why did you want us to have this conversation here today on your platform, your amazing platform, knowing how difficult it is? And how do you feel about it now?
I think walking into this, I was very nervous. I'm not gonna pretend that I wasn't. But it's the nervousness of not saying the right thing. And I think that is the most paralyzing thing. It's not that I have problem having the conversation. It's not knowing if I'm saying the right thing or delivering it in the right way. And I never want to ostracize or harm or hurt anybody. And I feel, I'm empathetic, sensitive type of person. So when I feel like I've done something that might have been hurt or hurt somebody else, I feel it, and it hurts, and I don't like that, and I don't like putting myself in a voluntary state like that. Does it make sense? You know, I'm often having to push myself with conscious leaders to go into uncomfortable conversations, but this one is traumatic. I think for all of us. And, you know, I learned a lot preparing for this and just like having the understandings. And I must be honest, I don't have a problem like, oh my gosh, you shouldn't have done that. That was weird. But I don't like necessarily listening to conversations around it. And I'm honest about it is because sometimes I feel attacked by them. So I feel, okay, that is something that I recognize in this session is that I need to lean into it to understand more. And it's blatantly honest, but I have to be honest because then what is the point of having a platform and saying, okay, let's be authentic, but I can't say what I think. So I really need to have more awareness and more leaning into these conversations more. And thank you. I really want to say keep up the good work. It's really amazing. I'm so proud of you. And like Sena is on the Youth Collaborative Conscious Leaders.
But I want to say, I think you said something so important there, and I think it's a challenge or a call to action for everyone. It's being afraid to say the wrong things. So a lot of the time we found it's not the intention. It's, again, that paralyzing fear. Can I tell you something? As we're sitting here, I'm terrified that I have said the wrong thing.
No, I'm very terrified.
I'm terrified. And the truth is, we probably have said some things today that people won't agree with, a perspective. And I think that that still shouldn't preclude us from engaging in the discussion. And that's something we have to remind ourselves all the time.
100%.
It's hard. I'm worried.
And the thing is, it shouldn't be so hard.
Yeah.
And we're probably creating another podcast now. But I mean, it shouldn't be so hard to have this conversation. It should actually be in the ancient times, the different tribes, it was a thing to go and visit the different tribes and to go and have lunches together and move from one to the other, learn wisdom from different religions and different tribes. And the wisdom deficit that we are facing from cultures, and some cultures and languages disappearing, and the disparities, and especially pertaining to language. I mean, I think artificial intelligence, the language programming is only currently working on 100 languages, and I think there's 7,000 languages. So how is that inclusive? And as I mentioned before, if we don't have the language to have this conversation, how are we going to get anywhere?
We've got to change that. And then we need to be intentional in diversity and talking, even though it's difficult.
I know.
Yeah, thank you.
It's always amazing. And I love sitting in these, I wouldn't say comfortable, but I like sitting in the in spaces where we can have these robust conversations. And I want to thank you once again. So, from my side, I just want to say thank you for tuning into the Carmen Murray Show, and for supporting conscious leaders. And that's what this journey is all about. It's like becoming conscious and aware of the things that we need to change. And it's a journey. It's not something that's just done with a magic wand, but it's really just leaning and trying to understand and learn from each other and having those brave conversations. And I hope that you've learned something here today, and that you should never feel shameful, but always just recognize that you are a human being, a whole human being, engaging with another whole human being, and it's just having a conversation heart to heart and trying to understand perspectives. And if you step into these conversations with love, kindness in your heart, you won't go wrong. I think you could see that today. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.